people that are still basically reciting Russian propaganda, that Putin is still saying that they're taking towns every day. Every day they're taking more and more towns, and unfortunately they've had to listen to that for 4 years or something. So they'll continue to listen to it. A lot of them will believe it, although I'm sure more and more people are wondering why the heck they can't get a can of gas. Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, I'm listening to the conversation. And it reminds me of the Korolev was ethnic Ukrainian. All of them were in Gulag, in Russian camp system. They were prisoners. So if you're talking about the weapons, if you're talking about the flight of Gagarin, it was all work of Korolev, all work of the prisoners. So the difference was that after Second World War, United States of America took German scientists and paid the money. The Russians took German scientists and created gulags, created labor camps, concentration lagers. That's why Russia is what it is. That's my opinion. Back to you.
Okay, yeah, that was Operation Paperclip. We took half of the German scientists, and von Braun was the head of the V6 missile testing and such. We took half of them, and the Russians took the other half of them, and combined them into our national group, and how can I tell you? Russians kind of feel happier by imprisoning people, so I guess that's why they arranged it that way for themselves. But, you can only do this for so many centuries, and ultimately, you keep on kicking your dog, and one day the dog's going to leap up and bite your neck off.
Yeah, they created Saraskas. So Saraskas were NKVD scientific facilities. So prisoners could stay there, and eventually they had a chance to be alive for some time. Depends on the mood of the operationers, the guys who were watching them. But actually, if it's not Korolev, ethnic Ukrainian, Russia wouldn't be in space even today. I'm trying to make a joke. But there is a difference between taking a scientist, paying him money, giving him the future, or just cutting his fingers and hands and ruining their lives and the lives of their families because of the knowledge they have. But that's the difference between West and East. Back to you, Dr. Webb.
Yeah, well, it's an old thing. Some people believe in the carrot and other people believe in the stick. And some people believe a little bit of both of it. But in Russia, I'm sure mostly it's the stick. And if they're going to use the carrot, they're not going to feed them the carrot. They're going to shove the carrot someplace up them.
Okay, thank you very much. I got all of the comments that I have in this.
Okay, very good. Any other comments out there? Okay, I'll assume that we're talked out. But again, I'll remind you that very often we go on this initial artificial intelligence chat and things surrounding it, and eventually, an hour or two later, someone brings it up again, and we talk a little bit more. So don't be surprised if you hear about artificial intelligence in an hour or so. Anyway, thanks for everyone responding, And we shall now move on to the main segment of our technical net, questions, comments, and topics. If anyone has any of those, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name. Give me your call sign. And tell me if it's amateur radio related or just general science and technology.
Enter HCN. Ham radio related.
Okay, Wes, you're on the list. Anyone else want to go on the list tonight?
HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie. Comment, amateur radio related.
Okay, John, I'll put you on the list. Probably going to be a very short list, but I'll put you on the list, and we'll get back to you soon. Anyone else want to go on the list for tonight? Okay, John, what do you got for us?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening, Matt. Just a quick comment on something I came across in some amateur radio news. There's some legislation moving forward in Canada, which, you know, may influence us down here as radio amateurs eventually regarding antenna towers. And it seems that in Canada, the federal government has the last say in any kind of radio towers. And that their position is any amateur radio tower that it's 45 feet or less, the amateur radio operator doesn't have to consult local authorities. He can just put it up and that's it. There's no need for a building permit or whatever. And, well, I wish that was here. We have something, but not quite that good. But, they are lobbying now, to get that extended up to, 20 meters, which would be another, 15 feet. So what I just found with that was interesting is the legislation, when you dig a little deeper, it's really a package that's for radio towers, for cell towers. But they've very smartly wrote in some amateur radio related tower to get support from the amateur radio community, which they are. The amateur radio operators out there are very much in favor of it. So it's just something I wanted to bring out there, just a little piece of news. And like I say again, if it goes forth in Canada, you never know. It may spark something down here with the cell phone tower operators, and they'll try to include us in it. So that's it. Just something to keep our eye on, and I'll let you know if I hear anything else.
Okay, very good. Thank you, John, as always. I don't think it translates well to the United States. States' rights, I think, are kind of locked in, and I think it's going to be more difficult to kind of reset things. There is a bill in Congress. It's vaguely similar to the bill that was being talked about 7 or 8 years ago before it just faded away, but now they have a new one. The Homeowners Association just strikes me as too strong these days to get anything that's really beneficial to us. But, you know, stranger things have happened.
Oh, yeah. The current legislation, which is, you know, it's something. It doesn't override the Homeowners Association because basically you've entered into a contract, you know, that supersedes that. You signed, you've given away that right. So, ex the Homeowners Association. But, you know, I think there were cases I remember when I lived in New York City where ham radio operators successfully won in court the right to put an antenna on the roof of an apartment building. So, that was encouraging. And, everything helps. Let's see. I just thought that it was interesting, though, how these cell phone companies, I guess, you know, they're looking for any help they can get, and it was, you know, it was clever of them to include something in there for the amateur radio operators in it. So I just wanted to bring it up because it's down the line. Something does appear here, some sort of bill with, you know, which is including the, you know, the cell phone towers or whatever. You know, we'll at least know the genesis of it. Back to Ned.
Yeah, it's always good to be aware of things, even though, you know, chances are it's not going to kind of make it south of the border. We'll see. We'll follow it. You know, I'm not that optimistic to the Congress. They seem to be busy with something else most of the time. So, but we'll follow it. We'll see what happens.
Comment.
Sure.
This is KD2VHD. Another interesting topic. It's interesting to me also that the ham radio community has a lot of self-policing on many things, whether it be from what's said to when it's said to, you know, licensing and all that stuff. And for the most part, we're pretty discreet on and off-air with our equipment. And there are some wildly askew deviations from that policy where there's a station near me that literally is a junkyard in the sky. Somehow it seems to me that before letting that kind of stuff persist, somehow socially we should be taking actions to kind of nudge that in the right direction before laws get written to encumber us all. I don't know if I'm painting this the right picture, but it's never talked about, but some stations are ridiculous. Most are not.
Okay, but the problem is most regular civilians are not really set up to be self-policing in the extreme. I knew a guy who once told me a story that he found some guy who was really misbehaving, and he banged on his door, and I think the guy greeted him with a gun. So, you know, people willing to kind of break FCC laws, that usually is not their limitations. They usually go far away past that point. So it's problematic when you ask individual amateur radio operators who usually don't have any training in this to, you know, to secure the frequencies. It should be something that the state, we are licensed by the state. It would be nice if the state supports us. But unfortunately, unless these guys do it massively and interrupts other services, they usually let it slide for years. You'll read these stories of people breaking FCC regulations, you know, for the better part of 5, 6, 7, 8 years before the FCC gets around to shutting them down.
I wasn't referring to breaking any regulations. I was referring to the situation that's rare but very conspicuous when it exists of a legally operating station that literally is a junkyard in the sky that nobody can miss as they go by. It is, I don't want to use the word offensive. I think that's totally the wrong word. It's just ugly. It's ugly to somebody who doesn't know what they're looking at. It's ugly to somebody who is an operator and doesn't know what they're looking at. It's ugly because it's a piece of crap. It's just piles of pieces. It's a junkyard in the sky. Various contraptions of... We should do a better job as a group somehow, giving those people a hand, as it were, to be better ambassadors to the public, perhaps, is what I'm trying to say. All right, I've said enough. Over to you, Roy.
Okay, well, yeah, the problem is if they don't actually violate any particular law, but it's more of a case of a failure of aesthetics, it makes it much more difficult to kind of use any you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to threaten them with? That a bunch of guys are going to break into their backyard and clean up the place. I think if you tried to do that, he could call the cops on you, and he has a better right to do whatever he does. You know, I mean, you might talk to the zoning commission and some such, but otherwise, that's real difficult because you pretty much have to take these guys to court, and, you know, lots of luck for the next 10 years.
I propose nothing of this. No use of force, no use of government persuasion, none of that sort. We seem to be able to prohibit certain words and certain opinions on air. We certainly should be able to help our fellow licensees to present a better picture, or try. Some will say no. Not much you can do about that. But I've never heard of an effort to kind of say, listen, Joe down the block's station looks like crap. Everybody in the neighborhood hates it. Maybe we can go help him out.
Okay. I mean, I personally have never had that situation. Usually the stations that I have detected in local neighborhoods are not very obvious. You know, you'll see an antenna or two, but that's about it. I mean, there are probably a lot more cases of hoarders and moderately crazy people who have set up junkyards in their backyard and to the annoyance of all their neighbors, far more of those types of people than amateur radio junkyards, simply because there's just more generally crazy people than there are amateur radio operators. So personally, I haven't experienced it. I don't know exactly what you could do. You'd have to kind of, through the law, I would assume. I mean, personally, you could knock on the door and offer help, but, you know, usually people like this are blind to the weirdness of their own environment, and more likely, I would assume, to say no than to say yes. But, again, if you could ask them, you could suggest it to them, but if they tell you to get lost, I know of no method you could use other than kind of zoning laws and other such than to get lost.
Again, I propose no use of force or government authority, just a neighborly thing. I just never heard it talked about it, so I think it's not common, it's rare, but when it appears, it's conspicuous.
Okay, it's just not an experience that I've been involved with, so it's probably why it's not really chatted about. If it was more consistent and severe, then there would be cases for that. We used to have a club member who decided to put up a massive vertical in front of his house. And he had already kind of annoyed the neighbors by parking a plane in his garage. And he, you know, they just complained to the police department. I don't think they really got anywhere for the antenna, but the airplane, they definitely got a lot of traction.
I wonder who that was. You got to get extra.
Yeah, we've discussed this more than a few times. The gentleman was infrequently a participant of the technical net back in Dick's time before he passed away.
The thought of a pilot is kind of dead. It's not around anymore. Even to middle school, I had not known at the time that he was about the auto light the light plane.
Strictly speaking, I don't think he was a licensed to operate a plane. I think he had a learner's permit.
Yes. And it is possible to get, as I understand it, to get four pilots to get with the little passenger driver's light and actually fly a real plane. supposedly it's kind of difficult because the insurance companies wouldn't be too happy about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know what the details were. The gentleman had a very complicated life. And, you know, anytime someone attempted to explain it to me, it just confused me more.
Yeah, I remember from the 70s when I took part the chaos with the police machine, old days. Actually, I only met him a few times at the mayor back in the 70s. And I still active in the old radio society.
Yeah, he made his presence aware to most people nearby. You know, he was not a quiet gentleman. Yes. I think there's something a little bit wonky with my All-Star. Give me a minute and I'll reset it. Okay, I should be back. Wesley, what do you want to say?
She was about flying to the junkyard. Picasso work often explores themes to perception, reasoning, may even metaphorically relate to the idea of seeing beyond the surface. And that is actually what applies to anybody, everybody, who claims having God. The reason I mentioned that is because I have a friend who is in police department, and he said that they had a situation where aesthetics was in question, and the gentleman who owned the property said, this is an art. And he is not an artist, but he has a right to expose the art. Back to you.
KC2GS. Yeah, that's not uncommon. It's not a lot of people like this, but I remember there was this one guy who kind of decided he was going to put up an exhibit in his backyard, and he kind of dedicated the next 20 years of putting one piece of junk on top of another piece of junk on top of another piece of junk, and I think he finally... When he passed away, he willed the area to the city as a art exhibit. And so as far as I'm aware, it's still up there in California. So I'm sure there are other such cases. My guess would be you would probably see more of messes that are excused as art than as, you know, antenna aerial towers and such. But that's just because there's probably more people who think they're artists out there than people who think they're hams. Any other comments on this subject, or we will move on to the next person? Okay. Wes, you're next. Once again, don't know what to make of the outline that you're generating. I'm assuming it's artificial intelligence because it just gives me a migraine. What do you got?
Yes, some of the information I condensed form, and I sometimes use that condensed form from different sources. So the first subject to discuss is actually not the discussion. You already told me on the email that it's mostly visual, and I agree with that. So what is the mysterious software shortwave signal? What is that mysterious shortwave signal? Explanation with the receiver. That's the title all of the video on YouTube. And that video was posted by OM0ET, the ham radio operator OM0ET. It is worth the time. It explains how to understand and interpret weather force signals on the radio. It helps hams understand the origin of some noises that you can hear on the radio, AM, broadcast stations, ionospheric creek chirps, SSB signals, phone communications, digital signals, and whatsoever. But the Morse codes, they are very much characteristic, especially for people who like Morse A1 telegraphy. The horizon right radar, and there are some signals that in this video were suggested to be understood as Chinese high-power welding devices. They work on the low frequency and they are by means of propagation and reflection from the atmospheric layers. They could be heard with quite strong power in United States of America. So China has very powerful welding machines. That's what the suggestion comes from the video, but actually, again, the video title is "What is that mysterious shortwave signal?" Explanation with SDR receiver, and it's worth your time. The next one would be WinLink mail server, and I would love Dr. Roy to say a few words. WinLink mail server gateway for 2 meters. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Not particularly. I mean, I don't find WinLink to be that stimulating. It's what, 20-30 year method of simulating an email server. Use an email server. I'm not a big fan of WinLink. They're used for emergency purposes. If for some strange reason the entire internet goes out, and yet the connection that the server for the WinLink is still connected, which again, I'm not quite sure how that works. So, I have no particular interest in WinLink.
Interesting. Actually, you said it all. It utilizes amateur band radio frequencies for communication. You have a gateway station, and it's a cloud structure or infrastructure. And they use Amazon Web Services for better reliability, and redundancy. I have a problem with working. Okay. So for those who are interested, it is just reminding that you need to have a call sign and you need to have authorization. And then you need to create the password, and you're going to use your gateways, and then you're going to have SSID number generated that you could actually use. But that's mostly for the information. We're not going deep into it. ICOM ID 205200. So we have ICOM. We have ICOM that is not for sale yet, but it was presented, and we know that we have a 5100A before the model is probably some of ham radio operators do have it. It is not much of the difference between those, but it is interesting that we have a new model from that series. Dr. Roy, for your time.
No, real comment. You know, it isn't out yet. Maybe when it comes out, someone will buy it and tell us how he liked it or how he didn't like it. But at this point, it's just, you know, it's not even available.
Okay, so they say it should be available this spring. But it is not yet. They present it everywhere. There are a few videos that you could see with that radio in action. And there is www.hamradio.com. And those guys present that ICOM 5200. It has a significant features that the 5100 doesn't have. But I suggest that you watch the video. It features enhanced D-Star capabilities, the LCD touchscreen, and additional memory channels, dual band receiving while transmitting, and it's a true. I mean, I'm not sure if it's not disturbing a person who is talking over the radio, and then the receiver, the secondary receiver from 70 centimeters, he's talking at 2 meters, and the secondary receiver is actually talking to him. But maybe some people have a better experience. And to exit. Okay, the next one. Why prison things keeps them from prison? So, there is a guy on YouTube, and he has the Action Lab. The Action Lab has 5.1 million subscribers. Guy is into science and heavily into science. And we would think, why do we need to ice the crop in order to protect it from freezing? Dr. Roy, your comment.
On what?
Why freezing things keeps them from freezing?
I didn't see this particular video.
Okay, so farmers use specific methods to protect flowers and crops from frost damage. And there is one effective technique used by them, and it involves spraying water on the plants before the freezer cools. And when water freezes, it releases the heat. The process helps maintain temperature on the plant tissues above the damaged level. And we could actually see that we have in refrigerator bottle of water, and it's near freezing. Even though the temperature is below 0 Celsius below the freezing temperature, the water still didn't freeze. But once you knock it, the water immediately start to freeze, immediately, in your eyes. You're watching at it and you see it freezing. So the water must be applied continuously during the freezing event to ensure that temperature remains stable and prevents damage. The benefits of using water frost for protection by farmers is insulation and moisture management. So actually, we see something that has ice around it, it doesn't mean it's dead. It doesn't mean it's frozen. It means that the temperature is still in it. Only if you don't touch it, it's not going to get damaged. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Thank you. Okay, well, that's a general conception of supersaturation. You need some kind of a seed to begin the crystallization and the phase change. If you use distilled water that's very clean and doesn't have anything that can act as a physical seed for the beginning of crystal growth, you can lower the temperature of an object below its freezing point without it making a phase change.
Yes, indeed. So we're talking about crop and farmers, timing sprinklers should be. So we talked about time. So the sprinklers should be activated before temperature dropped to freezing and kept on until temperature rises again. And then we have a coverage. The entire area needing protection should be watered simultaneously to ensure effectiveness. They cannot do it, okay, I'm doing it now and then the other part later on. In order for water to freeze, it must release heat energy as molecules arrange into an ordered ice structure, which is why freezing is exothermic process. So that would be, I can talk about it, but the significant process, I repeat again, is knocking on the surface of the bottle of supercooled water triggers nucleation process, causing the water to freeze instantly. If you don't want to damage something, don't touch it until the ice goes out of it. I did that experiment many times. I knock on the bottle of super cold water, and it freezes in front of me in a few seconds. Another subject is anti-gravity. So anti-gravity A1 has nothing to do with anti-gravity. Anti-gravity doesn't exist. It's just the name. It's the name of the drone. So we had the DJI drones that were banned in the United States of America. And then we have anti-gravity. The anti-gravity is an American drone and is taking as a storm. It is the world's first all-in-one 8K 360 drone. So we're not talking about the drone as a drone. We're talking about the new technology that was implemented to the drone, which is not that new. 360 view is known for quite a few years now, and it's being widely used, especially with the cameras that you could hold on a stick and eventually film yourself and film together. There was a problem with geometry that the picture wasn't quite easy to be transformed to the videos, but now that is almost gone. Right now we have anti-gravity A1, which is the drone that is recognized as 8K. 8K, we're talking about, not long time ago we had the 480 by 720 resolution, then we had 1080p, which was 1920 by 1080, and then we had the 2K, then we had the 4K, and now we have the 8K. So 8K is the standard right now, although most of the TVs in houses are still high definition, I assume. The last one. Right after the darknet, I saw the news and there was a flight reportedly hit strong at 3,000 feet during approach to land at JFK. And then, no, actually, that was 18 hours after the takeoff. The JetBlue plane reported striking a drone while on final approach to John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York. That was June 30th, 2026. Okay? The first question is, what drone was doing at 3,000 feet? Colliding with aircraft, with commercial passenger aircraft, and that aircraft landed safely. Later on, I found exactly what was the flight, and the altitude was 2,000 feet, location was approaching JFK Airport, and that was June 30th, 2026. The collision between the flight and the drone highlights the ongoing challenges on managing drone operation in proximity to commercial air traffic. Such incidents can pose significant safety risks, prompting discussion about regulation and enforcement to ensure safe airplanes. So we're talking about children, women, men, the passengers in the plane, not expecting anything. And then eventually we have a collision with the drone. FAA didn't do anything because they didn't find the guy. They didn't find the drone. So we took it. But funny situation. Dr. Roy. And maybe Paul would be able to say a few words.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. Maybe Paul has some insight. I don't.
No, not at all. Yeah, I read about it, but no. No. And if you're near an airport, you know, somebody, you know, they have said that drones are a problem around a lot of airports, so it's not that unusual. You know, they're looking into a way to curtail the problem, but yeah. I wouldn't want one of those things to get sucked up into the intake of one of those engines.
Yeah, that would be just incident. But then again, at the same day, very day, helicopter pilot reported a very close call with remote control plane that was gigantic in size. Now, the gigantic in size reminds me those drones in New Jersey that we had, supposedly Chinese drones, nobody caught them, nobody talked about them. Paul, maybe you have some comments.
No, I don't. I don't know. I remember, yeah, well, that was a big thing. All over the news media a year or so ago with drones near the airport. And, they were they're flying saucers and lights flying through the sky in New Jersey. And, I guess the news media moved on. They had better things to talk about. You don't hear about it anymore.
Roy, back to you.
Yeah, I don't have anything on this. I remember last year they were talking about sniffing for nuclear weapons or other such stuff. You know, the problem is that drones are readily available in all shapes and sizes, and although they're not legally supposed to be flying anywhere near airports, people break the law and screw around all the time. So it probably was just a case of them screwing around.
Okay, so the comment of the pilot, I saw the video, both of the video were sent to Roy, was we just hit the drone at 3,000 feet, And then the same day, a little later, helicopter pilot, which they didn't say, but of course the video was there, the news was there, but they didn't say what helicopter pilot. Hit gigantic model of airplane, gigantic, that's how he describes it, gigantic control plane. Was it drone? Is it legally drone? Is it considered to be drone? What is the difference between control airplane and the drone? Paul, maybe you have a description.
No, not really, Wesley. I don't have any description. I can't help you on that. You know, I can tell you there's plenty of drones in the Ukraine, doing great, manufacturing them by the thousands. So, you know, I think we have to get used to it. I think the amount that you steer around will eventually increase, not decrease.
Roy, what is the difference between controlled airplane and a drone?
Principally nothing. A drone is an unmanned aerial vehicle. So you can have a small one, you can have a large one. They're all drones.
Okay, so it looks like the remote control airplane that was reported at the video that I sent you was a drone, only gigantic. Thank you very much. That's all for tonight and today's here.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wesley, as always, for your participation. Anyone else out there with any questions, comments, or topics for tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
PhD coming.
Yes, Jim.
I want to make not really a correction, but fill in some information from something that was said earlier about Winlink. It is possible to use Winlink in a completely internet-free environment on the moon, on Mars. Not from the moon or Mars, I mean on the moon and Mars. You can operate Winlink with its related software in a completely internet-free environment. That's one of the modes. Just thought I'd throw that caveat in there.
Okay, but I mean...
You dropped out, Roy. Signal only, no audio.
KU2HZD, you would have commented on the RC planes and stuff?
I keep dropping off of All-Star for some strange reason. Okay, hopefully I'm back on All-Star. Any comments out there?
Yeah, Kilo 2, Hotel Zulu Echo, Tom in the Bronx. I have a comment and a question about what you think about the RC planes and a scenario that I want to propose on how serious these RC planes are now, how many people are buying them and stuff. But if you didn't mind, I'd like to add some on that.
Sure.
All right. Now, you see these drones and everything, right? What people don't realize in the remote control field, it's changed dramatically. They're using LiPo batteries. They're using batteries that are 11.1 volts, 12 volts, 24 volts. They're using brushless motors and everything. As the general was talking about the drone that hit the plane and everything, and God forbid it would have went into the engine compartment. Nowadays, you can buy a remote control plane, all right, and they're very inexpensive, and they actually have a feature where you can hit a button, and it'll actually land for you and everything. they're using smart technology and everything, but I have a question. God forbid there was an RC plane, and they do come in various lengths and everything, and you get a big one, and it's got two of those big LiPo batteries. God forbid those batteries blow up and stuff, and, you know, going and getting sucked into a plane or something like that. So in the RC field, a lot of people are getting into it now, and they made it a lot easier. As I said, there's a company called Spectrum, and they make all kinds of controllers. They actually operate on the DSMR band and everything, and it's very interesting. I'm very heavy into the RC field. Let me let it drop so we don't time out. So I have a question. What would you think about that, how these things are using these LiPo batteries and everything, and how you have to charge them in a battery box because, God forbid, they pop or blow up and everything? So just imagine that going at or hitting a plane. Back to net control.
Well, having any relatively large object hitting a plane's you know, jet engine and such is dangerous, even if it's cardboard. But usually lithium iron phosphate's a lot less dangerous than the old lithium ion or lithium ion polymer. So it's probably not that terribly dangerous. I mean, there are standard protocols. And also there are size and weight limitations. Unless you want to go and get certified for operating a drone, you're kind of limited to something like, what is it, a kilo, a half a kilo. These are relatively smaller models that hopefully will be somewhat less dangerous if they impact a plane. Most of the large drones that we read about are beyond the point where you got to get FAA licensing to operate them, and then you should know your stuff a bit more. So I'm a little bit confused about whether these are registered drones. If they are, they should have ways of knowing where they are and who's operating them.
All right, absolutely, I understand that. But when you're talking about an RC plane and everything and stuff, you know, it's using electronic speed control. It's using LiPo batteries on the RC cars now from a standstill. These cars are flipping over. That's how fast the motors are and these brushless fan systems and everything. And look how many people. You can go to a hobby shop right now. You can order it online. You can go on Amazon and order them and everything. Normally, in the RC car field, in order to operate a gas plane, you got to know what you're doing and everything, of course, and everything. And then you have to be registered, and you have to be part of a club and everything. And then you go there and you fly your plane, and the club, someone's there to assist you. God forbid something happens and everything. With the controllers, you can actually plug one controller into another, and they call it a buddy system. So I'm not just, you know, mentioning that. When the gentleman started talking about RC planes, it caught my eye and everything. I'm very heavy into RC, so. And I don't fly planes or nothing. I never flew helicopters or nothing. I bought cheap models and everything. But, you know, if you can really buy something really expensive and really large and do significant damage, God forbid you crash that thing or crash into someone and everything. That prop spinning at that much with these new brushless motor systems and everything and how powerful and fast they are, you can really do damage. All right, back to that. Just wanted to add a little something. I've been listening the whole time, really enjoying it, guys. K2HZE, back to net control in the group.
Okie doke. Thanks for your participation. Most of these planes are intelligent with GPSs. They have lockout systems for the most part, where they simply won't activate if you try and lift them near airports. There are all kinds of geo zones where they're disabled if the GPS detects them in those locations. So, I don't know. I think that's one of the reasons why this is not a common occurrence, thankfully.
All right. No, that definitely makes sense. Like I said, it's just very interesting and how far we've come. Like I said, these guys are using batteries that are 10,000 milliamps. They're getting, you know, an hour's runtime, an hour and a half runtime, and everything's pretty crazy and stuff. So very good. Back to the net, and we'll be monitoring.
Okie doke. Once again, I'm AC2GS. Name is Roy. This is the Limewire Technical Net. We have 10 more minutes if someone has a question or a topic that they would like to discuss, hear discussed, or a question that they would like people to try and answer. So if anyone out there has anything for our last 10 minutes, hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, we'll give you one more try. If you got nothing, that's fine. But if you do, we have a we have 10 minutes that we could use to discuss a different subject. So if anyone has a new topic or a discussion or wants to bring something up before we move on to the SpaceNet report, please hit that push to talk and say your piece.
Net control.
Yes.
AEC2PL, happy 4th, belatedly, Roy, and no comments, just wanted to check in and say supporting.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. I hope you had an enjoyable 4th of July. I hope everyone out there had an enjoyable 4th of July and it didn't hurt themselves or anyone else. You know, being a doctor, I remember the bad old days of the emergency room on the 4th, and there was always a couple of people who weren't terribly clever who had a tendency to shoot little bits of their digits off. Okay, anyone else with any closing comments before we move on to the next segment? Okay, I can take a hint, guys. Thanks, everyone, who participated tonight. I hope you enjoyed yourself. I hope you learned a few things, and I hope you'll be able to join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we do this all over again. So, Paul, WS2N, if you can, please bring us the SpaceNet report.
Okay, a little early, but we could do it. WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And, yeah, okay, on all the drone topics, too. Look at Ingenuity, you know, that flew, you know, from one location to another. They plan on doing no more than 5 flights with that thing when they got it to Mars. You know, it was brought up by the Perseverance rover. And sure enough, it got 5 flights and 10 flights and 20 flights. It went 72 different flights. You know, for a couple of years, and you know, the thing was no bigger than it was like the size of a CubeSat. Maybe CubeSat is 10 centimeters, you know, by 10 by 10, you know, roughly 4 by 4 by 4 inches, and lithium-ion batteries, and it had its own controller, and they would program it to go, and it would, we go, you know, up 20, 30 feet in the beginning, and then sometimes higher, and then send it off in one direction, you know, maybe an eighth of a mile down the road, you know, and then come back and land at, you know, four legs sticking out. Now that's what I call a drone, you know. Anyway, let me see if anybody has any space comments before we continue on. WS1.
What is the density of atmosphere in Mars?
Okay, a little low. Something about Mars, and I don't know the station.
Antrixian, Wesley. What is the density of atmosphere in Mars? Okay. Because I was thinking about helicopters or the drones using helicopter structure to fly on Mars. So my question was, what is the density of atmosphere in Mars?
Okay, yeah, well, it's one bar here, right? Pressure 14.7 pounds, and you have roughly 1/100th of that on Mars. So it would be equivalent.